Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast. Before we get to the fun, here's a quick word from one of our sponsors.
This episode of the Paleo Solution Podcast is sponsored by Sleep Cocktail.
So the number one factor to improving your sleep is to realize that you actually need to sleep, that you are human, you are mortal, and that nothing will break you faster than not sleeping, and nothing will improve your performance faster than sleeping well.
That's Dr. Kirk Parsley, sleep expert and former Navy SEAL. Dr. Parsley has been beating the sleep drum for years, first with the SEALs, and now to a much larger audience, trying to get the rest of us to understand just how important it is that we value our sleep.
Just convincing people that sleep is really, really important, and here's why. And you compare it to drunk driving, and you compare it to, you associate it with all of its disease risk. Like, you name any kind of Neolithic disease, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, you name it, sleep is a huge factor in that.
Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? Try Doc Parsley's Sleep Cocktail. Go to robwolf.com/sleepcocktail and use code ROBWOLF10 to save 10%.
Hey folks, Rob Wolf here with another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast. My guest today is Steph Goodrow. She is a holistic nutritionist, coach of Olympic weightlifting, founder of the amazing Stupid Easy Paleo. Steph, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
And we'll throw in there, you're also the wife and caretaker of one of my favorite human beings, Craig Zielinski, who I just have to throw out there yet again, were it not for Z basically swooping in on me years ago, helping me with my blog and podcast and everything, nothing that I am doing today would be here without his help. So enormous props to him. And to you married pretty good. He married really good, but you married pretty good.
Yeah, he's a pretty special human.
Yes, he is. John Wellborn even likes him, which that's like, whew, John doesn't like anybody. So.
Yeah, there you go. That's a testament right there.
Yeah, totally. So, Steph, give folks a little bit of your background. You have not always been a lean, jacked, healthy, top of the food chain, Olympic lifting coach. Like, you came from a bit more of a broken background than where you're at right now. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. So we always joke, like, I suffered from an endurance background, but in all seriousness, I've had a pretty interesting sort of transformation in not only the sports I do, but my career over the last, let's say 3-4 years. I decided back in 2012-ish that I was going to leave my career, which was at that time a science teacher. I was teaching high school science in public school, chemistry and bio. So I've always been really interested in nerdy and geeked out on human phys and the body and nutrition and food and the whole nine yards. But, you know, just was teaching and kind of felt at some point that this wasn't where I was supposed to be. And in 2011, I had started my blog, which is Stupid Easy Paleo, and found actually the Paleo Solution and Paleo Diet for Athletes way back in 2009, 2010. So quite a long time ago in the perspective of the paleo community.
And the interwebs, yeah.
Yeah, there were like 3 blogs and 2 books. And I've got the Paleo Comfort Cookbook was the first cookbook I got when that came out. And, you know, there was hardly anything out there in terms of resources, but just decided to give it a try. I was racing mountain bikes at the time. Lots of like long distance endurance stuff too. And I had dabbled in all kinds of bike racing. I did downhill for a while and that was pretty high in adrenaline, high intensity. Mm-hmm. But I lacked the sort of like throw yourself off a cliff mentality that you really needed to do well in that sport. So I progressed to more of a tame sort of just go around and do laps and long point-to-point races and stuff like that. So I was really out there on the bike long periods of time, but I picked up those books in the beginning because a couple friends of mine were like, we're going to try this gluten-free diet. And I was like, what even is that? So I just decided to give it a try. And, you know, I was one of those people, I was never sick per se, but I just knew I didn't feel good. I would, I would leave work every day and I would stop at the 7-Eleven across the street from school. And I get, you know, like M&Ms and a Coke Zero to just feel energetic and make it through the rest of my day and hopefully make it through training and not feel like crap. So, so I did, I tried paleo cause I had been a vegetarian. I had tried, I had done Weight Watchers, like you name it. I tried everything. And, I was like, well, what do I have to lose? Probably nothing. It's probably not going to work. But then within a couple months, I felt better than I ever had before. So I started the website in 2011 because I always liked to cook and I was putting recipes on my personal website at the time. And somebody, I don't know who it was, I should try to figure it out so I could thank them, was like, you should just start a food blog. So, you know, like all good things or people suggest things to you, you're like, all right, sure, I'll do it. And I had no idea what I was doing. And I just started putting recipes on Stupid Easy Paleo and talking to people about it. And people were just coming out of the woodwork and asking me questions like, how do I do this? How do you do this and still race and do your thing? And at that point in 2010, I found CrossFit. So I was actually doing CrossFit at the same time. I was kind of toward the end of my biking career and got a lot stronger, just combination of diet and sort of different training. And so I had a lot of people asking me how to do this stuff. So then I decided to leave my job and like totally everybody's like, you have the most secure job. You're a science teacher, dual credentialed, like, you know, in
what
science.
What in God's name are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that sort of thing. And I just kind of knew that if I didn't make the leap, then I would never do it. And so I started, started working for myself, which was crazy, but it's been amazing. And that was almost it'll be 3 years coming up this June. That I left.
I'm just curious, like, do you have a bit of an entrepreneurial streak or was that kind of a surprise? Because in our experience, like running the gym, having trainers and stuff like that, like I cannot find anyone less entrepreneurial than school teachers. Like the security, the like, man, I've got to have all these I's dotted and T's crossed. And like the, you know, like you introduce any type of unknown, any type of, you know, questionable security for those folks. And they absolutely freak out. And it's actually hard to run a business around that sometimes. So I'm curious, like, were you, you know, what kind of got you into teaching? And did you know that you had an entrepreneurial streak or did you just like take tons of amphetamines and just power through that? Like what's the story with that?
So when I was in college, I started pre-med. I started actually as a physical therapy major. I was going to Springfield College, which the PT program there was incredibly competitive to get into. And I got in, there's like 50 people a year and admitted into this program and did a year of that and was like, I hate this. So then decided to go move to UMass and major in biology, sort of pre-med. And then as I went on, I was like, you know, my uncle's a pediatrician. And I just kind of thought about it. And I was like, you know, I love the idea of helping people. And I love the idea of, you know, health and wellness and physiology and all this stuff. But I just don't think I have it in me to do that sort of a career. Mm-hmm. Cause I want to have the life that I want to. It's kind of selfish that way, but you know, I came to the point where I had to decide, was I going to go research track? Was I going to stay pre-med? What was I going to do? And then I was like, well, there's this third option. I could try to, you know, see if I could teach this to other people. And I went into the classroom and you have to do a bunch of observations and, you know, volunteering and stuff just to see if it's the right fit. And I was like, I kind of like this and I can mm-hmm. decide what I want to do from there. Come to find out, like I almost got into a lab doing work on, endocrine disruptors and PCBs and also BP, you know, like all BPA kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they worked with amphibians and that probably would have been really interesting, but I just decided to stay the education route. But yeah, you're right. Like for me, I mean, I literally for 12 years had a bell that would tell me when to show up to work, when to leave work, when to pee, when to eat, when I had my days off, which days off I, you know, where my vacation was scheduled. So I had this really structured career, extremely structured. And for me, the idea of doing things my own way and doing what I wanted to do was incredibly appealing. But the idea of losing that security and sort of regularity and that safety net was really scary. And I definitely worked with a coach for quite a while about working through my own feelings on it. And what did I think people were going to say, and mm-hmm. how did people perceive me, and was I ready to do this? And, I had no entrepreneurial bone in my body for sure. But now I can't picture working for anyone else or doing anything else. And I always joke that I probably would be the worst
employee now, right?
ever. Cause I've gotten used to doing the things that I really feel strongly about and I'm passionate about.
That's awesome. One of the most common questions that I get these days, not related to food or training or anything like that, is just kind of like, what do I do with my life? You know, there's a lot of people that are asking me these questions. Should I go into medicine? Should I do physical therapy? Should I open a gym? And, you know, it's a really tough question. And one of the first questions that I ask people is, what's your risk tolerance? You know, like if you have a low risk tolerance and you really want something that is like dot the I's, cross the T's, like guaranteed safety, you could move anywhere and have a job, then I'm like, be a physical therapist, be a physician's assistant, you know, something like that. And then usually, if somebody's already in the academic world or in teaching in particular, like high school or grade school teaching, and they're asking me about a career change, I'm just like, I don't think you're going to be able to do it, man. Like, you know, they're like, do I open a blog? Do I put it together a gym? And I've just found the security and kind of the metronomic lifestyle that comes out of that is so entraining for those people that it is, they almost need a brain transplant to be able to get out of that. So that's fascinating. So it wasn't just a super easy process for you to shift gears on that.
No, it was really, really scary, really scary. Okay. And, you know, I was just one of those people that I just thought, okay, I'm not going to know. Like, you always kind of want the path to be laid out in front of you. I was one of those people that I was like, I want to see where this is going. I want to know what's going to happen next year, 5 years from now. And I was like, I have to be okay with more of the unknown. And also this idea that now I have the freedom and opportunity to create things that don't currently exist. Mm-hmm. And I find myself, you know, there's kind of a knife's edge that I exist really well on, which is like, yeah, there is that fear of the unknown. There is that, you know, I don't always know what my income exactly is going to be from month to month. No one pays, you know, I pay myself. I don't have somebody send me a check in the mail every 2 weeks or whatever. But for me, that that mental sort of freedom slash ability to create whatever I want is what drives me and motivates me now. And I feel I've never been more sharp in terms of my own ability to create and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, like I could stand up and give a lecture about electron configurations and I would find myself not even thinking about what I was talking about because it was just so rote and so easy. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the job that I didn't love. I was like, I get to repeat this 5 times today. That's great.
Right.
and now, so, you know, there is a pressure for me to create and work, but the freedom that comes along with stretching myself and sort of learning new things and always creating stuff is kind of addicting. It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. But there's definitely some stress and some unknown. I've got to give some props to my wife. She came from a very entrepreneurial family. I did not. Mm-hmm. And so I discovered that I had an entrepreneurial leaning, but, we were really lucky in that, she was okay with some unknown, and we had some really rough years, like getting the gym started and stuff like that. Like, we made no money. It was super variable. Even when we started making some money, you know, as to how much would come in, and then, you know, the city would change some ordinance, and then you were on the hook for like more money or, you know, whatever. And so it was kind of crazy, but I got lucky in that she was a full supporter of doing this stuff. And she's very, very good with business. Like, she's got a great business head. She's become an amazing project organizer and sees pitfalls, you know, that are coming around the corner and stuff like that. So that's been really lucky.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think for people that want to get into their own business, I mean, I couldn't do half the stuff I do without Z. And right. I know he's always like, oh, you know, I don't do anything. But really, I mean, I think of all the really successful people that I know, and they're either in it with their spouse or their partner, or they have a really strong business partner, or they have, you know, a really core group of people around them. And I couldn't do this stuff. Like, I don't have all the skills. I don't have all the time. And it's really been the last couple of years. I feel like I'm finally getting a foothold. And I think social media and kind of what's out there for entrepreneurs is like, you can make 6-7 figures right now if you just learn how to do webinars, and like, yay. But the reality is that you have to be willing to put in the work. There will be those lean months. And once you get your systems in place and things start to roll, you know, it's become easier and easier. But I think, you know, everybody wants that instant gratification. And so you have to be like, you know, you almost have to pass the marshmallow test.
Oh, totally.
Totally. So yeah. Are you willing to wait and have that delayed gratification?
A good friend, not to diverge too far, but I just find this stuff super interesting. It's where my headspace has been a lot lately. I have a dear friend from my childhood who has been in the military for 20 years. He's getting ready to leave that, and he's been building a business kind of a little bit on the side, and mm-hmm. he's super fired up about that. He's made good money with the military. He's an officer and all this type of stuff. But his wife is a school teacher, has been a school teacher, you know, 20 plus years now. And there's some real drama brewing there because she is not cool with like a decrease in their income, a potential decrease in their standard of living, unknown, like he shot me an email that she had shot to him. And she's like, we just don't know if this thing's going to succeed. I mean, there's no guarantees. And it's like, yeah, no shit. You know, again, like the school teacher deal, and I'm going to get a bunch of hate mail from school teachers now on this thing. They're like, you're a prick. But it's going in and just like digging a hole and planting a seed and growing that thing from nothing is no joke. Every once in a while, somebody has a spectacular idea and it absolutely goes to the moon. And a lot of people assume that because I've had a New York Times bestselling book that I'm just absolutely rolling in dough. I make good money, but I am not J.K. Rowling. I did not write Harry Potter, you know? And so it's there's some vast differences from one tier of the Times list to the next. And it's still a lot of rinse, lather, repeat and get in and try to remain relevant. I was early in this scene, but there's a ton of stuff out in paleo ancestral health that land, and you know, you have to figure out, okay, how do I continue to enjoy what I'm doing? How do I make it relevant and all that type of stuff? So yeah, it's interesting.
You have to be flexible enough I love the term pivot, you know, you've got to have a head on your shoulders, and you've got to sort of know where you're going. But at the same time, and I think it's the book Rework talks about the idea of pivoting and staying light. And I think that's really important. I think people in your friend's wife's position, she wants like the next 20-year plan to be written out. And first of all, I mean, the idea that we all have security is a complete myth anyway.
Right.
You know, but you have to kind of know where you're going, but having a plan and having it there and being one of those people that sticks so closely to the plan that you can never see a new opportunity or new room for growth is also kind of the kiss of death.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We've started a lot of projects where we thought it was going to go one direction and it pivoted and it went in entirely different direction. And luckily it did, you know, our initial idea had some good elements, but it definitely needed some fiddling. So, you know, as you got into all this stuff, clearly you've taken on a strong orientation towards performance nutrition and kind of high level coaching. Like, what drew you specifically to the more performance minded person? Like, I've always kind of focused more on like the sick, nearly dying. Like, I'll dabble in performance stuff, but you know, my gig has been more autoimmunity, cancer, that was my background. I have some really compelling kind of life stories behind that. But what drew you to this kind of performance orientation?
Well, I think you just summed it up right there, and it's what I know, and it's always been something that's been important, an important part of my life, something that I've done. I mean, I've competed in sports since I was about 8 years old, and I've done a zillion different things, but being an athlete and competing and moving my body and challenging myself in that way has always been a part of who I am. So for me, I kind of, you know, whenever I sit down and I think, what am I going to work on next? I always try to think of my own wheelhouse. I mean, I'm not the type of person that's going to try to be a specialist in something that I know relatively little about. And so I have gone through that journey of like, you know, again, you name it. I've tried that diet. I've, you know, the pasta dinners, the this and that. And for me, it was a really interesting journey to try to figure out how I could eat a real food-based approach, you know, very limited in terms of grain intakes. Sometimes I'll do white rice now, or sometimes I'll do like corn tortillas if we're out, but we eat gluten-free. Like, you know, how I could really train hard and still do well without eating a bunch of crap or a bunch of like fitness food or the stuff that is marketed toward athletes. And So it's something that I was dabbling in myself, and then I would get people asking me. And so it just became kind of a natural fit that I started to explore that stuff even more and really started to, you know, and I've gone down that path of like pretty much eating no carbs to eating more carbs to, you know, not ever eating anything that had a label to, you know, you just kind of, you change and flow with the times. And I've really learned what works well for me. And so then I would get people asking me, and I think a lot of times athletes would come up. And so when I was in the CrossFit world, especially, you know, knowing your own story with CrossFit and paleo, that was definitely a thing. So a lot of CrossFit boxes talk about paleo, or they, you know, they're telling their clients about it. But I would get a lot of people, and they'd be like, but really, can you do that? And so, you know, how do I make it work? And when I really looked out there, there wasn't a ton that was marketed toward that type of athlete.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was more toward the endurance side of things, which is, you know, how it all kind of began, paleo diet for athletes and stuff. And like I said, I had picked up that book myself, but you know, sometimes people have a hard time applying those concepts to their situation without it being really spelled out. So that's really where my work with other athletes and people who are performance minded. Sometimes I don't even like to use the word athlete, because a lot of people who train like an athlete don't select that term to describe themselves, because right. They don't ever maybe enter into a formal competition, even though they're thrashing themselves, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a week, training really hard. They have a lot of goals. Sometimes they don't use that word because they're like, well, I don't ever race, or I don't ever do a CrossFit competition, or whatever it is. But it just for me was sort of a natural fit. And I still compete and I still train. I don't do CrossFit anymore, really, you know, unless it's just something for fun. And so I do weightlifting now, but I still get questions all the time from my athletes in the gym that I coach, or people contact me. It's like, I know I want to eat better, and I know the foundation of kind of my performance nutrition, I need to change it in some way, but I'm not really sure what to do. And so I get a lot of people writing in, like, how do I kind of tweak my carb intake? How do I know what's too much? How do I recognize if my performance is, like, how do I even track that stuff?
Right.
And so, it's just been a natural evolution.
So talk to us about that, because, I mean, this has definitely been an ongoing thing for me. In the past, I did really well with cyclic low carb when I was doing just more, you know, gymnastics and a little capoeira and stuff like that. When I got into CrossFit, I found that I was just really cratering if I had multiple workouts a week that were pretty glycolytically demanding. I'd been in and out of ketosis for years, have really, really good cognition on that. But, it just didn't seem to tick all the boxes for that high kind of glycolytic output. I have some people who absolutely want to barbecue me alive from the really low carb camp, that they're like, no, you can do all this stuff ketotic. And like, I really, really, really tried, but I haven't really been able to crack that nut. But I'm also trying to find this this balance there where, like, I have good glycemic control, I have good cognition, you know, throughout the day. I don't get into these kind of hypoglycemic events, which is part of what I start experiencing when I start fueling for the activity that I'm doing, and I do pretty well with that. Then I start feeling like I've got that, like, oxygen bottle analogy with regards to my food. Like, I really need food all the time, whereas if I'm eating lower carb, I'm really resilient with regards to eating. I can go 12-15 hours. I don't need to eat. What are your thoughts on all that stuff? How are you dissecting all that?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, people want the one answer that's going to apply to them and everyone else in the world, which, as we know, those types of generalizations and rules of thumb don't work for everybody. So the first thing people need to know is that if you're going to go on a website and you're going to get, say, a macro calculator, and you're going to type in your average daily activity level and whatnot, and it's going to spit out a number, like, that might be a starting point for you, but to just take that and blindly apply that is not taking into account all the other life factors that you have going on. And if it does work for you now, it might not work for you if you change your training, if you get sick, if you have a life event that adds a lot of stress to your life. You know, all these things that we know, you know, when we're talking about these generalizations, sort of everything starts to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times the first mistake that people are making is they're going online and they're looking for the one answer. And it's just not there. So you have to pick a point. You do have to pick a point. And the way I like to get people to think about this is, like, you know, for most people, if you're training pretty hard, your protein intake should be roughly around the same number. And the variance is really going to come in terms of how much carb or how much, you know, how much you're steering the boat towards carbs or how much you're steering the boat towards fat. Mm-hmm. And some people do really well with kind of a balance between those two things. A lot of the people that I know that are training really hard, they're training for regionals, or they're doing like two a days, they're doing lots and lots of training. A lot of it's glycolytic, and or they also have a lot of life stress. They do better with just kind of turning the knob up on the carbs and turning the knob down on the fat. I think where people get into some trouble is thinking that caloric intake doesn't matter at all.
So long, right.
You know, and so I think, you know, for a long time in paleo, at least, it was like, yay, we get to eat all the things, and we get to eat all the fats, and make sure, like, the fat and the protein is more satiating, like you're mentioning. But I think a lot of people were just like, wow, look at me downing this bottle of almond butter. This is amazing. I can just eat as much as I want. And, you know, at some level, energy intake for most of us does matter. Like, I think there's some, you know, there's obviously a lot of bio individuality in terms of our resiliency and our ability to be able to deal with, you know, hey, we're going to go through a period where we're taking in more calories or we're taking in less calories. But that unrestricted sort of, like, eat whatever you want for a lot of people doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so again, you'll go online and you'll see, like, just eat what you want. Calories don't count. They don't matter. And then on the other hand, you'll see, like, unless you eat exactly the same number of calories, and unless you have an isocaloric diet, you're automatically going to gain weight. Right. Or, you know, you have to be hypocaloric to lose weight. So people think, well, if I'm supposed to be hypocaloric and I want to lose, in most cases, they want to lean. These are athletes. They want to lean out. I don't know any athletes who want to lose their muscle mass, but, you know, they end up, they're like, well, if a little caloric restriction is good, then a lot is better. So we end up with these chronically hypocaloric, high performing, high output athletes, either on purpose or by accident. A lot of times people really underestimate the amount that they eat. And so you get all sorts of crazy stuff because people just, they think there's, you know, this is the answer, but then they're going to really push it in one direction because if a little's good, then more is better.
Right.
So I think that's probably the number one thing that I see. And also not giving, you know, we understand this. Like, if you're scientifically minded, you kind of know you're not, if you want to kind of narrow down, and we're not just, human beings are incredibly complex, but if you want to narrow down whether or not the changes you're implementing are working, you've got to give it some time.
Right.
And I think a lot of people that I work with are like, I ate this way for a week and nothing happened. I should change something else now. So they jump, and whether it's nutrition related or program related, same thing. They jump from program to program, or, you know, nutrition tweak to nutrition tweak after a week or a few days or even 2 weeks. And they're like, nothing happened, and they don't give it the time. So I would recommend for, you know, athletes, if you're logging your workouts and you're really going to see now, like, all right, what if I take my carb intake and I turn it up, say like 10% or even just a little bit more, depending on what sport they're doing. You got to like kind of be consistent. And I don't want people to be obsessive compulsive about it and have it become almost a point of disordered eating, but you kind of had to keep an eye on things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I had somebody tweet me today. I don't know if she'll listen to this, but she's like, you know, I just don't feel like things are going well. And I was like, well, do you don't feel they are, or like, is your performance actually decreasing? Do you have any benchmarks? Do you have any metrics for that? And, you know, body composition, same thing. You know, the typical, like the scale, oh, I gained weight. And then you see somebody, you're like, actually, you just look really jacked.
Right.
You know, so they're gaining muscle mass and actually losing body fat. So there's so many things that people kind of get super confused about. And I would just tell people, like, keep your protein intake, you know, don't cut that back. You don't, we never want to lose muscle mass, especially as we're getting older. But if you're going to do anything, it would be like turn the carbs up and the fat down, or turn the fat up and turn the carbs down. So I like to kind of think of it almost as a seesaw.
Right.
And, you know, so those higher glycolytic type of endeavors, the CrossFit, the, you know, intervals, the sprinting, the, you know, long kind of threshold.
Jiu-jitsu, MMA,
yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah. Like that sort of stuff. Even if you're like, I'm an endurance athlete, this is what I used to do. I'm an endurance athlete, but I would go out and do all kinds of crazy intervals and like be drooling on my top tube on my bike. And, but I'm like, but I do endurance. So shouldn't I be like super low carb? You know, that'll be okay. For me, it wasn't. And I think, you know, that's what I kind of tell people to do. So if you are doing stuff that's really glycolytic, or you just need the extra recovery because your life is just crazy pants other than your training, like, if you're going to turn up the carbs and you want to stay relatively isocaloric, you may want to turn down the fat a little bit.
Right.
And you kind of, you know, think of it as a dial. I never like to tell people like you're going all or none. Right. And they're like, well, I'm going to try to be ketogenic. And I'm like, well, how about you like turn it down first? And we know like the body takes time to respond to that sort of stuff hormonally, like upregulating, downregulating, you know, transcription, translation, like all that stuff genetically takes a little bit of time, and your body likes to be at homeostasis. You know, if you're going to do something super drastic, you may get sort of a, you know, that like initial change. And obviously the thing that people report the most is like, I went paleo and I lost like 10 pounds in the first 2 weeks. Then what happened? I stopped losing weight. And it's like, well, that might have been some water weight, like, you know, some inflammation that was initially going down. And then if you want to shift that body fat, it's going to take a little bit of time. So, yeah.
No, I like it. Answer. I like it. No, it is. And like 10 years ago, I thought I had it all figured out. It was like low carb or maybe cyclic low carb. And then it's kind of like, well, actually, there's a lot more nuance to it than that. So I'm always always trying to figure out what the you know, how to crack that nut. And again, I've got some people in the, and I'm as big a fan of ketogenic diets, low carb diets as anybody you could find. I think they're amazing mm-hmm. for TBIs and a host of different health situations. There's a lot of people that just cognitively, they feel a lot yep. better on a ketogenic diet, but there's also a reality that not everybody follows that pattern. And so, you know, I think you've got to give folks the latitude on both ends of the spectrum to be like, well, experiment. And like you said, mm-hmm. give it a good 3-4 months to really try on that sweater and see what's going on. Like there are more and more people out of, say, like the ultra endurance scene that seem that are doing quite well on a ketogenic diet and then doing like some targeted carbs during their event. They're like completing the events on a half or a quarter of the calories that they used to bring in because they're burning more, more, you know, stored body fat. And that's good from like a gastric emptying perspective. And they seem to bounce back quicker because they have less inflammation. That's super compelling, but it's interesting. I don't see anyone in CrossFit, MMA, 2000 meter rowing, 800 meter or mile, you know, distance running that are successful with a, you know, super low carb intake. Like they may play with that. They may do some periods of time for adaptation, but particularly if that glycolytically demanding event has multiple repeats to it, then I really don't see people succeed with that. And people will fight me tooth and nail on that. And I'm just like, dude, this is what I'm seeing out of the research observationally. And then, you know, as a coach myself trying to do this and going into it with the assumption, no, man, we can totally do this low carb, you know, and I wasn't going in wondering if we could. I assumed we could. And then I was kind of stumped when we couldn't. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Well, you know, there's always going to be a spectrum. There's always going to be a genetic outlier that everybody's going to use as the, you know, shining example of how it does work. And that's, I think we have to be willing to accept that. There are going to be people who are, their constitution, their genetics, their environment has led them to, you know, they are adapted better, or they do become better adapted to using those more extreme sorts of ends of the spectrum. And I, you know, it's not to say that we can't ignore them, but you have to be kind of careful with applying that heuristic to like the rest of the population. Right. And, you know, I would just tell people to just, you've got to keep an eye on things, you know, and be really honest about whether or not it's actually working for you. And that brings up a whole other host of questions. Like, are you truly an elite athlete trying to eke out that 2 or 3% of performance? Are you willing to make the sacrifices? You know that what you're doing isn't necessarily health promoting. That's your own choice. You get to decide what you do. And if you're going to make it to the Olympics and you're stoked off your brain about that, then that's amazing. And I know some people right now who are, you know, sort of in the mix for USA weightlifting for 2016 for the games, which is awesome. But I don't think anybody in that position would say I'm an elite athlete. What I'm doing is like going to lead me to optimal health per se. So I would really kind of caution people before they use those examples of either the outliers or the elites is like, are you really after elite performance, or are you just trying to be kind of good at your sport because you really love it and it makes you feel good when you do it? But overall you really just want to have optimal health. And I think that's a really important distinction that people have to make.
Right.
Because you're going to be willing to do things in your training and with your nutrition if you're at the true elite level that you wouldn't do if you're just like, to use a Rob Wolfism, you want to like look, feel, and perform good.
Right. Right. Which is the vast majority of folks, but you can get a heck of a lot of good performance while looking and feeling quite well also. So totally. I like that. So Steph, what so you went from more endurance oriented stuff, really heavy into mountain biking, did some CrossFit. Was it the CrossFit exposure that really lit a fire for the Olympic weightlifting you know, activities, and then getting in as a coach in that direction?
Yeah, you know, it's actually pretty amazing because I sat in essentially a closed hip position for about 8 years on the bike. The fact that I can Olympic weightlift with any sort of proficiency is, to me, is a testament to the fact that your body can be very plastic and adaptable to whatever kind of training you put it under. But I mean, when I started CrossFit, I have a vivid memory of the day I had to go in and try box jumps for the first time. And I think it was 16 inches was the lowest box. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't jump on a box. Like, so any kind of explosive power that I had was almost non-existent. Right. But you know, I quickly found that the gymnastics stuff I was going to have to work a lot harder at, because it just wasn't, first of all, the sports that I had pretty much always done were lower body dominant sports. So my upper body strength wasn't quite there and I just didn't have the coordination, but I found that I was getting pretty strong pretty fast. And so I think I just naturally gravitated toward lifting. Mm-hmm. And then in 2013, I went to regionals in SoCal with Team Sea of Green. So that was the second Invictus team. And we did really well. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, it had one of those kind of top three sports moments where everything worked and we did so well. And I was so happy. And then I left my job. And then I was like, okay, now I'm self-employed and I need to work really hard at my career. And I remember, so I moved to Scotland to be OZ. And I had a discussion with him at one point. This is kind of in the fall of that year. And I was still continuing to do kind of competitive level CrossFit training. And I looked at him and I was like, this will kill me. And I need to not do it anymore if I want to work more on my business and really make this thing succeed. And so I decided, hey, the next best thing for me is going to be to do some strength training. I'm still going to get a really good result. Physically, I can still keep up my strength or get stronger. And it didn't have the same kind of training stress / recovery. Demands. You know, the demand right. wasn't quite as high. And so I spent that fall lifting and doing some small love junior squatting and got back to the States in January of 2014 and was like, I'm going to just be a weightlifter. And so started working back with my old coach. And so I've been doing that for the past 2 years and I just love it. I mean, it's again, like I still continue to put a lot of emphasis on my job and in this business that I've created. I still can compete, but my training looks like 3 or 4 days a week now instead of 6. Mm-hmm. And, through some pretty, you know, some pretty interesting conversations with my coach and him knowing me well and me giving him good feedback, we've come to a really good place where, you know, I continue to get stronger, maintain, and, you know, I'm not beat down from training all the time.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So how are you, what's the demographic of the folks that you are coaching right now? Mainly female? It sounds like there's some go-getters that you know that are maybe Olympic team hopefuls. So like, what's the makeup of the folks you're coaching?
Yeah, so right now, so the folks that I know are that are kind of on the docket for potential Olympic spots, I know through social media. Gotcha. And kind of the weightlifting world. But at our gym, we have you know, we've got some pretty accomplished athletes, and we have people joining all the time. We're the largest Olympic weightlifting facility in San Diego now. We have a 12,000 square foot facility split between weightlifting and CrossFit, and we have weightlifting every single day of the week. So, you know, that's really cool for people because they can come in and just work on weightlifting if they want. And, you know, I'd say the split is pretty 50-50 in terms of female and male athletes. And we've got a lot of people that have qualified for collegiate nationals, senior nationals, American Open. There's a couple of us that are thinking about going to Masters Worlds because now I'm a Masters lifter. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. You know, Masters Nationals, there's a few of us signed up for that too. So we have people going to national level competitions and stuff, but a lot of young people now, which is really cool. We do have some masters, but and a lot of seniors, but a lot of juniors and a lot of collegiate age lifters, which is really cool. Because they're all like indestructible and 20 and 21 years old and, you know, and they're super enthusiastic and it's cool to watch their evolution as athletes and, really be able to get at them when they're a bit more plastic and mm-hmm. form, you know, you can mold them a little bit more. So that's kind of on a daily basis who's coming in and out of the gym, but we've got moms and, high school kids and middle school kids and really everybody doing weightlifting now. So it's pretty fun.
That's awesome. And is that at Invictus or where is that facility?
This is CrossFit Fortius.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Yeah. And so we're located just right in the heart of San Diego.
Very cool. So yeah. you have a new project coming out here at Online Summit. Tell folks about that.
Yeah, this is kind of a passion project for me. And, you know, I don't know about the origin of City Zero, but for me, this is a project that I decided I was going to do. And I was like, there's nothing that's going to stop me. It's a 10. I talk with my coach about 10s. It's a 10. Like, I don't care what happens. This project just has to come out to the world. So I have an online summit launching March 1st. It's called the Women's Strength Summit. And as I've gotten on in this sort of ancestral health, paleo community, in the weightlifting CrossFit community, especially, you know, I hear from so many women that are like, I want to start addressing my physical strength. I want to start addressing my nutrition. I know mental strength is a huge part of all of this, but I don't really know how to get started. You know, they're like, I want to do it, but I don't know how. I don't know who to listen to. I don't know who has trustworthy information. And so I decided I was going to put together this online event that people can sign up for and listen to for free. We've got 33 expert interviews. And it's the thing that I don't know if I can actually claim this, but until somebody tells me otherwise, it's the number one conference by women for women. So all of the expert speakers are women who are thought leaders and doctors and coaches and athletes in their particular field. And so we're going to get together in this sort of online venue and just sort of hash out everything that ladies deal with, from the female perspective. And I think, you know, if you're a guy and you're like, oh, that's all going to be chicks just sitting in a circle talking. But you know, if you're a coach, you run a facility, you have a lot of female clientele, you want to support your significant other and just get some insight into the stuff that women deal with, I think it's going to be valuable for men and women alike. But yeah, I'm really excited. I've got some of my own personal sort of heroes coming on board. And I sat down the other week, last week, and I made a graphic of all the people involved. And I was just kind of blown away that not only was I able to round up all these people and they liked me enough to say yes, but that there are so many strong female voices out there now and growing by the day. And it's really cool to be able to, no offense to the guys out there who are experts in this stuff too, but sometimes it helps to bring women in when they can identify with somebody.
Absolutely.
And so,
yeah.
So that's, and I think about women in the gym and they come in and sometimes they're like, when are you coaching next? And it's not that we don't have good male coaches. We have some amazing coaches with like over 40 years of experience put together. But I think sometimes they're just like, she gets me.
Right, right. Well, you know, Nikki, my wife, she has seen me do jujitsu for years and she's kind of like, it looks okay, but it's not really that interesting. And then my coach, Kelly Farrell, is a female black belt in jujitsu, really amazing athlete, great person. And she started a women's only Brazilian jiu-jitsu program. And I was like, you know what? Mm. You should just go check this out. You know, you may not like it. You haven't shown a lot of interest in it so far. And she started doing this stuff and she totally digs it. And now, like in the evenings, we put the kids down and we actually try to put them down a little early. And then we throw the mats out in the living room. She's like, okay, so show me this umaplata again, you know? And so we are actually doing it together a little bit, but she definitely likes going to this women-only group and having a female coach. And I think that there's a really cool kind of experience. And, you know, tying it maybe back again into the ancestral health scene, and this is going to be yet another thing where people attack me on, but in most traditional societies, the men really kind of hung out with the men and the women really kind of hung out with the women. And then there was definitely some mixing. It wasn't like there was some sort of implicit line between the two, but they just kind of spent a lot of time together, you know, and I think that that's okay, you know, and I think that we tend to make that wrong for a variety of kind of squirrely reasons when, you know, maybe this is yet another piece of our biology that we would do better to kind of honor it and run with it versus trying to make it a bad thing.
Yeah. You know, I think there's something to be said for kind of this, I don't know what you call it, I guess, sisterhood mentality. And, you know, there's always a lot of competition, I think, with females for other females, you know, like, why do we wear makeup? Why do we want to look good? That sort of stuff. And I think when you really come down to it, it's like, how do we look to other people of the same sex? And because there are direct competition, if we want to like talk about it from a more of a big picture kind of view. But I think for women that are a little bit reserved and like curious, having the entry point, that's somebody that they can resonate with, is a little bit more enticing sometimes than somebody that they just don't identify with quite as well.
Right.
So, so we've got all kinds of topics in terms of physical and mental strength, emotional strength, and some spirituality stuff in there as well. But I think, you know, it doesn't, some people want to work on their strength, but they're like, yeah, the idea of doing Olympic lifting is freaking weird and, or scary. And I'm not into that. So I've got several different entry points for people to start thinking about how they can build their own strength and then eventually progress through whatever sport it is they're really interested in. So, you know, we've got people talking about how to improve your sort of torso stability by using yoga and Pilates techniques all the way through powerlifting and Olympic lifting topics and everything in between. So it's really kind of a diverse mix of people, but I think all together is a really cool event for people to come in and like dip their toe in the water and see what all of this stuff is all about.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, Steph, let folks know where they can track you down online.
Yeah. So you're interested in food and recipes, which who doesn't love some good food porn? Right. You can find that at stupideasypaleo.com and all the related socials for that. My personal coaching website is stephgaudreau.com, which you'll have to just Google how to spell that. But if you do okay, you should find it. And then the summit website won't be live until February 14th, so Valentine's Day. But that URL is womensstrengthsummit.com.
Okay, and we'll get all that in the show notes so that it's easy for folks to track down. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Steph, give Z a big smooch for me. Love that guy. Again, cannot thank him enough for his help early in my floundering here, and he's continued to help me along the way. So I absolutely love that guy. Super stoked for all the great work you're doing, and very pleased that you had the time to come on the show.
I'm really excited. I've been a huge fan of yours for a really, really long time, and I really respect all the work that you've done in the community and all the things you're doing. So it's been an absolute pleasure for me.
Awesome. Well, I hope you guys make your way up to the Lazy Lobo Ranch to hang out with us at some point. So hopefully we'll see you soon.
Yeah. Don't threaten us with a good time.
We'll do it.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, Steph, take care. Thanks again for listening to the Paleo Solution Podcast. Here's a quick message from one of our sponsors.
It goes back to like before I was ready to get a divorce. It's been like 10 or more years. Waking up like several times a night and not being able to get back to sleep.
That's Mitch, a sleep cocktail customer in Santa Cruz, California.
I get 2 hours of good sleep. And then after that, my eyes would open and toss and turn, and the rest of the night was really not restful at all.
Then Mitch found out about Sleep Cocktail and started sleeping through the night, every night.
So nice to be getting rest again after, you know, all those years of not. And even if I do wake up in the middle of the night, I'm able to get back to sleep.
Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? Try Doc Parsley's Sleep Cocktail. Go to robwolf.com/sleepcocktail and use code ROBWOLF10 to save 10%.